Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
I've been begging people to listen to me. I've been literally begging. I'm so frustrated that this 20-year-old beautiful mom and her 4-year-old son can just vanish and nothing's done. And nobody's arrested. Nothing's done. Nobody does any searches. And life just goes on. I want this case to be solved. So I want the whole world to know about it. Nobody's ever talked about them disappearing. I want to know what happened to them. And I want to know why nobody has done anything, why nothing's being done, and why people say they know what happened, but still nothing's being done.
In 2002, a young woman disappeared from a small town in northern Arkansas called Salem. It may have been September, but some people say it was later in the year. She wouldn't be reported missing for many months, or maybe even years. Her 4-year-old son also vanished. But missing persons flyers note that he vanished from Missouri, and the date that he was last seen is uncertain. Supposedly, there is a photo of the child that is date-stamped well after September 1st, but nobody knows for sure. In fact, no one seems to know when or where mother or son were last seen, or who was the last to see them. Nearly 20 years have passed since a young mom and her son were last seen alive, and then they were seemingly forgotten. Today's episode brings into focus the stories of two people who appeared to simply stop existing. And it seemed like no one cared, until now. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 272 of The Vanished, Angela Mack and Thomas Mikey Ratu's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. 20-year-old Angela Mack and her 4-year-old son, Thomas Ratu, or Mikey as his loved ones called him, disappeared sometime in 2002. Over the past 5 years and over 270 episodes, we have learned that some stories are more difficult to cover than others. Some stories come our way with a detailed timeline to follow. This is not one of those cases. Trying to pull together even the most basic information has been difficult. Angela Mack, or Angie, wasn't born in Salem, Arkansas, but she ended up there when she was a teenager. A world away from the only life she had ever known in Escondido, California. Life in Arkansas shared nothing in common with the coastal Southern California city nestled in a valley, outside the busy metropolis of San Diego. Escondido had a population of over 130,000 people in the year 2000, while Salem, Arkansas had 1% of that estimated population, of just about 1,600 people. You might imagine how much a young woman's life would change with such a drastic move, but no one could predict that it would alter the course of Angela's life forever. For this story, we talked to Angela's brother, Joe. We asked him why the family made such a drastic move across the country.
My grandfather bought land, well, right outside of Salem, a little town called Glencoe. He bought 80 acres back in, I think it was the late 70s, maybe early 80s. Because Arkansas was one of the poorest states in the Union. And my grandfather owned his own company. made really good money. So he decided, since the cost of living and expenses were so low in Arkansas, that's where he wanted to retire. So when he did retire, he told everybody in the family, "You guys want to move out to Arkansas, I'll give you an acre of land. All you got to do is put a trailer or whatever you want on it, build a house, dig a well, and there you go." So we had quite a few family members that moved back there. And as far as where we came from, being from California and moving to Arkansas, I lived there twice. And it is shell shock for me. Greg and Angie were a little bit younger, but I mean, Arkansas is such a slower pace of life than San Diego, where we're from. And I don't know, it was, yeah, the best way I can explain it is shell shock. I mean, I got back there and was like, wow, this place is really slow. And the jobs weren't, they weren't very good paying either. I left California making way better money than I did ever make in Arkansas. My grandfather had the right plan. Retire back there when you got all your money. He's done pretty well for himself back there.
Angela's dad, Phil, told us more about Angie's early life.
She was a little blonde girl, and she was a jokester. And she was full of life, as the cliche would go. But she was a happy child. She was a thankful, grateful child. She was never wanting more than she had. She was never complaining of anything. She was a good kid. She was even a good baby. You know, everyone loved her. Just a little sweetheart, very endearing when she would meet somebody. And, you know, she was just had a presence about her that was super sweet. In her younger days, in school, she would even get in trouble for just playing practical jokes on people. I don't think she ever met anybody that she didn't strike a friendship with. She was just very outgoing and full of life.
Joe is the oldest of three siblings, and told us what life was like at home with Angie and their brother, Greg, growing up in an environment that wasn't always stable.
Family life was okay, but hard, you know, having our mom be a single parent for a long time. Well, my mom was married a bunch of times, kind of guys in and out of the house a little bit after she divorced Angela's dad. Other than that, I mean, she tried really hard. She was just a lonely woman. And like I said, a lot of that fell back on me to help raise her and my other brother. You know, my responsibility was making sure they were okay. They were, you know, a lot younger than I was. And so I had to grow up really quick. And Angela was the youngest. Angie was a pretty outgoing person. Me and her were really close. Ever since a childhood, I helped raise her and my other brother. And me and Angela kind of formed a really tight bond. Other than that, I mean, Angie was just known for being outgoing and, you know, kind of like life of the party, or if you were sad, she'd cheer you up. And she loved to sing, dance. She collected frogs. A lot of people referred to her as Frog. She collected like figurines, stuff like that. Yeah, I now collect frogs to keep, you know, kind of keep her memory going with me.
When the family moved to Arkansas, Angela had not yet started high school and didn't know anyone in her new town. She had left her best friend Tiffany behind in California. We spoke with Tiffany at length for this story and asked her to tell us about her friendship with Angie.
So Angie and I were extremely close from approximately 1992 to 1996 when we were in junior high. We were extremely close, best friends, up until the time she moved to Arkansas in late 96. Angela was beautiful, sarcastic, super funny. She just wanted to have fun, just wanted to make you laugh. She was just a fun person to be around, a great friend. When you're in junior high, that's a big important time in your life. We spent a lot of time together. She moved to Salem, Arkansas in late 96. I believe it was after the school year was over. I know she's in the 1996 yearbook, so I'm pretty sure it was about that summer they probably moved away. But I know that it was because her mother's dad lived in Salem. I talked to her over, you know, we wrote each other letters over the time she'd moved.
Not only was Angela moving to a completely different part of the country, But her life was changing in other ways, too. Her dad, Phil, had divorced Angela's mom and remained in California. And he shared with us how his relationship with Angela changed after the move.
My ex-wife moved to Arkansas from Escondido, California. There was a period there where I didn't see the kids for a few years. There was a period of time I just was out of contact with her because of I wasn't in the vicinity, and we would talk by phone. But within that period of time is when she went through all these things in Arkansas and a lot of different relationships she went through. And I never really knew what was going on behind the scenes during that period.
Angela was a teen in a new place at that time, so it wasn't strange that she fell out of regular contact with her dad back in California. Time seemed to pass quickly after the move, and in 1998, at just 16 years old, Angela gave birth to a son named Thomas, who everyone called Mikey. When we spoke to Joe, he told us about Angie's relationship with Mikey's dad, Thomas Ratu.
I'm not sure how they met. I was actually living in California when they met. Arkansas, where she lived, was a really small town, so everybody kind of knew everybody. I think they went to high school together, if I remember right. I met him, hung out with him. Like I said, everybody kind of knew everybody there, so I knew Tommy quite well. Tommy was kind of a no-good guy, into partying a lot, drugs. You know, everybody was young back then. But Arkansas, there wasn't a lot to do. You either hunt, fished, worked, partied, and did drugs. That, I mean, unless you go to church and are active in sports in your high school, if you're that age, there is nothing to do there. It is extremely small. So, you know, I mean, everybody get together Friday night after, you know, high school. They'd be drinking and smoking pot. They were on and off again. They split up and got back together. And then the last time she split up after she had Mikey, they didn't get back together, but, you know, they kind of remained friends.
2 years after Mikey was born, Angela gave birth to another son, Matthew. Matthew was just 2 when Angela disappeared and was raised by his dad and his dad's family. Joe told us more about Angie's life after becoming a mother and her relationship with Matthew's father, Jeremy.
After she had Mikey, it was all about she had to work and, you know, take care of Mikey. So she never really had any dreams after that. Getting pregnant was an accident for her. She didn't mean to get pregnant. But once it happened, you know, Angela wasn't going to get an abortion. She just said, hey, you know, I'm having a baby and this is what I got to do. I get that. She worked fast food jobs. I think she worked at a grocery store for a while. And then once she met Jeremy worked full time. And so she stayed at home with Mikey. I actually lived with him and Angela for a while after I moved out to Arkansas. And he was another no good kind of guy. Greg actually got into a fist fight with him over something to do with Angela. Like he was treating her bad and whatnot. And then I didn't really see him treat her bad, but, well, I did. Never physical, but he had a temper, a really bad temper. And he was another drug addict. I mean, Angela never got into anything, you know, but he was. He was doing a bunch of meth and who knows what else.
Angela and Jeremy's relationship didn't last. And she eventually met a man named James, who she would later marry in the months prior to her disappearance. Joe has fond memories of James.
James was kind of a goofy guy, not real intelligent, pretty easygoing. I didn't really mind James all that much. He wasn't into anything hardcore that I knew about at the time. I think he smoked a little pot, but other than that, I mean, he was just kind of an easy go kind of guy. I think she desperately just wanted a relationship. She'd been treated bad by, you know, the other 2 guys, and he was kind of a sweet guy.
We don't have much information about Angie's relationship or marriage to James Cox, but what we do know helps us establish a timeline of events the year that Angie disappeared. When we spoke to Angie's friend Tiffany, She told us about a horrible accident that James and Angie were in.
I have been told James was driving Angela to work. I believe they were en route to Mammoth on May 30th, 2002. A month after she's married, her and James are in a car accident. That car accident, according to the Arkansas State Police, the accident report says that Cox failed to negotiate the curve and he crossed over into the opposing traffic. He striked the opposing vehicle. It was being driven by a woman from Mammoth Springs, along with her 19-year-old pregnant daughter. Tragically, the driver, as well as the unborn baby, did not make it. Yeah, and so that was on May 30th, 2002. Angie was hurt. I have been told that she fractured her feet during the accident, and that I'm not 100% sure if it was both feet, but I know that she fractured her right foot and she did have some injuries. She was taken to the hospital. The accident report says she was wearing a seatbelt, but yeah, she did sustain injuries.
After this accident, James says he and Angela separated and stopped living together, and that he only spoke to her one more time, in June 2002, over the phone when he called and she told him that she was in California visiting her father. This is the last time we were able to ascertain that someone spoke to Angela, or claimed to have spoken with her. From June 2002 forward, there is no confirmation or evidence that Angela was alive. We weren't able to speak with James. So how do we know that he actually spoke with her in June? Well, this is just another odd twist in this case. Nearly 16 years after Angie was last seen, James filed for divorce in 2018. In his divorce petition, it states the following. Plaintiff James M. Cox would state that defendant Angela Christine Mack Cox left plaintiff in June 2002. Plaintiff contacted her by phone in June 2002. And she stated she was at her father's house in California. Plaintiff has not heard from her since that time, and her father has not heard from her since that time. The petition goes on to say that James checked with the Social Security Administration, and they told him that Angela's Social Security number had not been used since 2002. However, we were unable to verify this, and the Social Security Administration historically does not give this information out. We do know that Angela had gone to visit her father, not just from James's statement, but from our own interview with her dad. However, when we talked to Phil, he told us that the visit was the year before Angie vanished, and that he believed Angie returned to Arkansas afterward.
When she disappeared, you know, she was with me shortly before that. She was with me during the tower attacks, and I, matter of fact, on the couch, and I tried to wake her up. Tell her that history is being made. She'd rather sleep. Well, at that time, she was working, I believe, at Burger King in Chowchilla, California. I was just getting ready to move to Temecula, California. I left Temecula, and she stayed there in Chowchilla, which was the last time that I saw her. She had come in that morning when I was all packed up, and I told her that I would see her in a couple of weeks, and she was staying at some friends. Oh, not a quarter mile away. She said she'd come down and visit me when she could. And I said, well, I'll come up and see you in 2 weeks. And that was the very last time that I saw her. Matter of fact, I called her a week later. I called her at her friend's house, the number she gave me. And she was excited that I was coming up the following week. And when I went up there the following week, I went to the address that I knew she was at. And I talked to the people there. They said they hadn't seen her in about a week. And so I left Chowchilla thinking, you know what? What just happened? Why isn't she here? She knew I was coming. Knowing Angela, I figured she was offered to do something with some friends and took off. There was a lot of different activities to do up there as far as lakes and mountains. You know, it's close to Yosemite. So I just figured that, you know, she may have taken off and just did something with some other friends. And I left. And again, the very last time that I saw her.
Phil told us that Angie was a free spirit who would travel as she pleased, so he wasn't concerned when he returned home and she was gone. And we do know that she did return to Arkansas, and later was in that tragic accident. It's unclear why there is a discrepancy over when Angela was in California visiting her dad. Phil has a clear memory of that visit being in 2001, due to Angie being at his home during 9/11, which is something that wouldn't be easily mistaken. Phil says that she did not visit him in June of 2002, when Angie's husband claims he spoke to her while she was visiting her dad. Back in 2002, many of us had cell phones or were just starting to get them, but that wasn't the case for Angie. She was living in a rural area that likely didn't have cell service, and she also didn't have a computer to email, so she relied upon writing letters to keep in contact with her loved ones. By this time, her mother had moved away to Oklahoma, and her dad was across the country in California. They were accustomed to Angie's letters coming in on a regular basis, but then they just stopped.
I just thought that she went off and did something with some friends, and then it was apparent early on that she was gone to me, because not that she hadn't recontacted me, but she had recontacted her mom, and more importantly, she hasn't contacted her brothers, who she was always in contact with. Because I thought, well, okay, maybe she's missing, but it's odd for him to be missing. And with him missing, immediately I thought the worst, because it's just odd to me that both would be missing at the same time with no trace, especially a young woman with a child. There's got to be something. Someone knows something from somewhere at some time. I mean, it just didn't make sense to me. She had a habit of just traveling. She had a habit of picking up and just going. She had a really bad habit of hitchhiking across the country, far as what I've been told. What she's told me, she's done that before, and she's had a history of just taking off and doing things with other people. One thing that was constant during all this time is that it was so out of character for her to just not stay in contact with somebody. This is what was troublesome for me, because this was totally out of character. She always would stay in contact with family, somebody in the family at all times, and this time there was just no contact by her to anybody. I would say about 3 months or 4 months or so, I just hadn't heard from her, and I just couldn't understand it. And I talked to her mom, and her mom would say, I haven't heard from her. And she would express concern that something happened to her. And of course I did too. And we waited.
Meanwhile, back in Salem, Angie had a friend, Brandy, who had agreed to watch Mikey while she visited her father in California in 2001. We touched base with Brandy, and she told us about how much she loved Mikey and how the arrangement to care for him was made.
Her mother lived beside me in Salem, and she was my neighbor, and we got really, really close. I think she had already had Mikey. He was, like, young. She was younger than me, so I took her as a child or a sister. You know, I looked to her like my little sister or, you know, my daughter, because I had 3 kids at the time, too. She was my little flower child, but she was into the hippie. She was fun to be around. She liked to sing. We always just stayed in the house and listened to music and played with our kids. And she liked to swim, and she liked to talk. Many nights we talked all night long. Well, she talked most of the night. And I mean, I love kids. All the kids would always come to my house to play with. The neighborhood kids would come play with mine, and I'd have 10, 15 kids there. But Mikey and my youngest are pretty much the same age. I fell in love. My son was born in April, and he was born in July. So they were just that many months apart. He was funny. He was so young. She had wanted to go to California to visit her dad and him, but she couldn't take Mikey with her. So she left Mikey with me and gave me guardianship. So so she could go, and she was supposed to be gone for 3 months and come back. She didn't. She was gone almost a year, which I was mad at her because she didn't come back. She didn't do nothing she had told me she was going to do, but I got Mikey into preschool in Salem, Arkansas. When she come back to get him, I had then got attached, and I told her if she could stay at my house for a week, and then no problem, she could have him back, they could stay with me. Well, she had left and went and got DHS and the cops, which And everybody in Salem at the time knew I was taking care of my kin, what all I had done. The cops, Albert Roark and them, they all knew. And they really basically drug him out of my arms with him kicking and screaming for me because, he was young and he really didn't. She had just come back and he was, he was attached to me. But she did call him a lot while she was gone. And then after that, it kind of, drove me into a nervous breakdown because I was attached to the baby. And like I said, the cops gave him back to her. And then I tried to block it out, I guess, because of the mental breakdown. But I never got to see him after that. Angie promised me she'd let me see him and stuff, but she didn't. And then the next thing I heard, I seen that he was missing.
We know that Angie returned to Salem from California after her fall 2001 visit to her dad, because she came and picked up Mikey. Brandy couldn't recall exactly when it was that Angela returned from California and got Mikey, but she says she never saw either of them again and didn't know that Angie had gotten married. So we believe that Angie came and got Mikey prior to April 2002. As we work to narrow down the timeline of events, we learned from Angie's family that they started to become concerned when Angie's letters and phone calls stopped coming. This is what her brother Joe told us about the letters coming to a stop and his family's growing worry about her whereabouts.
My mom had told me, and my mom didn't know anything more either. She just told me, hey, Angela was in a really bad car accident, her and James, there was injuries, and she told me about Angela's injuries. I was no longer in Arkansas at that point in time. And she wrote me a little bit. We were writing letters after I moved out of Arkansas. And she wrote me a little bit. And yeah, she felt bad. I mean, because somebody had passed away. She didn't say it was anybody's fault or anything like that. But yeah, she carried some guilt with her. She was writing me letters probably once a week. And odd for me is the letters just stopped. And we were really close, and that wasn't like her. And this is like before cell phones and all that. I mean, they were out, but, they weren't real prevalent. And so you had to, kind of be on the higher end of making money than, most poor people because they couldn't afford a cell phone. And as far as I know, and my mom covered a lot of this, she said, and like, Angie had quit talking to me. I mean, the letters just stopped. She also kept in good contact with my mom. My mom was really worried, and she was like, I haven't heard from Angela. I haven't heard from James. And my mom was living in Oklahoma at the time. She'd moved out of Arkansas, and she said, she didn't drive. She was disabled. She said, I'm going to get a bus ticket, and I'm going to Salem. She goes, I know all Angela's friends, and I'm going to go talk to people. And she did, and there was a lot of rumors flying around about what happened to Angela. And, those rumors are still floating around today.
We'll discuss some of these rumors later on. But first, it's important to keep establishing the series of events in this story. You've heard Angela's brother and father discuss that they, along with Angela's mother, who has since passed away, were worried for months when they didn't hear anything from her. We wanted to know who reported her missing and when, but even that simple question can't be answered. Angela's friend Tiffany has worked tirelessly to answer this question and find out what happened to her friend, even though she didn't know Angela was missing for many years. We asked her how she learned that Angie had disappeared.
So for me, you have to realize that I did not find out that they were missing until years later. I can't even recall exactly what year it was that I became aware of her disappearance. I know that I had personally gone online, was trying to find her, probably Facebook, something like that. I couldn't find any trace of her, nothing at all. At the time, though, I did locate a post. It was by her youngest brother, and I don't even know where it was. I think maybe I Googled her name, and this post popped up, and he was in an Arkansas chat room of some type, and he was looking for Angie's whereabouts. So I reached out to him and he confirmed to me at that time that Angela was in fact missing along with her 4-year-old son. So I'm not 100% sure. Everything that I know about the days leading up to her disappearance is all hearsay.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. There is only a single news article that we could find that documents the disappearance of Angie and Mikey, and it raises more questions for us about the timeline of their disappearances. For instance, the article, published by a local news outlet in northern Arkansas, says that Mikey was reported missing on September 1st, 2002, from Salem, Arkansas. However, his flyer on the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children's website says he is missing from Alton, Missouri. The article also says that Mikey was last seen with a woman who was initially unidentified, but later said to be Angela. However, there is no adult companion listed on his flyer. Law enforcement interviewed for that piece stated that Mikey was last seen on September 1st, 2002, and reported missing the same day by his father, Thomas Ratu. We were not able to determine how Thomas, who passed away in 2019, knew Mikey was missing or what happened that day. Though we can't unravel this mystery entirely, we did learn why Mikey may have been in Alton, Missouri. Tiffany explained this for us and also shared a theory about what may have happened to both Angie and Mikey.
So Angela had left him in the care of a couple out of Missouri, and they were taking care of him. I believe, in my opinion, that they wanted it to be long-term, that Angela was considering it, but in my opinion, she was not going to go through with letting them keep him. I believe she came to know them through work. Wherever she was working at the time is where she became to know them. So we are not 100% sure if Angie ever picked up Mikey and brought him back to Salem with her, or if he possibly remained in Missouri. I don't understand why Mikey's not listed in Missouri. In my opinion, he was last seen in Missouri. So why was he not listed through Missouri? I believe that Mikey was never returned to Angie. I believe that she returned to Salem without him. And I believe that the couple that had him in Missouri may have possibly moved, taken him. The reason that I feel this is because I have found media articles where the husband was previously married. Him and his wife at that time had taken guardianship over three children. This is way before. When the parents went to get their children back, they moved. They couldn't serve them. They couldn't find their children. The couple had disappeared. Why wouldn't that man do the same thing and take Mikey and disappear? I pray they kept him. I pray they gave him the best life ever. And that when we find out he's alive, he's going to be well-educated, smart, you know, who knows, following his dream. That's what I pray and I hope.
This couple confirmed that they had babysat Mikey, but claimed to have no knowledge of what happened to him or Angela. Angela clearly struggled with being a teen mom without a solid support system. She sought out relationships with men as a way to find stability and hopefully build a better life for herself and her children. But they ended up being abusive. Being a single mom wasn't easy. Trying to work, support herself, her children, and pay for childcare was clearly difficult for Angela. And she ended up trusting others to care for Mikey. Could someone she left Mikey with have decided they wanted to keep him and harmed Angela? Perhaps they thought they could give him a better life. It's impossible to know for sure, but that theory keeps those searching hopeful that they may find Mikey alive. We asked Tiffany why the news article says that Angela was not reported missing until 2004, while Mikey appears to have been reported missing in 2002, but she told us she's never been able to get a clear answer about that.
So Mikey was reported missing by his biological father, Tommy Retu, September 2002. I believe at that time, Angie was reported missing at that time by her mother. Her mother, Lorna, has passed away since. So that does make it a little difficult as far as that 2002 date and having a copy of her report or anything like that. I think by January 2003, Angela was missing, was 100% missing. I think maybe some people had stopped seeing Mikey in September. Her family has letters from her mother in 2003, early 2003, extremely upset, trying to locate Angela, saying she's contacted Fulton County. So I don't understand where the 2004 date is coming in myself. Her mom at the time was living in Oklahoma. So I, in my opinion, believe that her mom contacted the Oklahoma Police Department and filed her missing. I'm not 100% sure, but I know that it was not, and it was not 2004 that the family got involved. I believe that is the same time Mikey was reported missing, September 2002, Angela was also reported missing.
Tiffany has relied on handwritten notes from phone calls with relatives, friends, and law enforcement to try to cobble together a timeline of her friend's disappearance. These are the only clues she has to confirm any information. She has graciously shared with us what she has learned and told us about one important date that helps us establish a time frame for when Angela actually disappeared. Memories are foggy after so many years, and we don't have Angela's mom to help us piece together the dates. Angie's other brother, Greg, has a clear memory from late September 2002, when he called his mom to let her know that he had just had a daughter. It was during this call that she told Greg that Angela was missing. The birth of Greg's daughter was a memorable life event that never got lost in the fog of time. So we know that by late September, it had been long enough for Angie's mom to be concerned that her daughter was missing. Letters between Angela's relatives and family friends continued through the end of 2002 and into August 2003. When Angela's mom wrote that she was going to Salem to look for Angie and talk to Mikey's dad. But even long after the letters and phone calls from Angela came to an end sometime in 2002, Angela's parents were waiting to hear from her, or from law enforcement that they were looking for Angie. Angie's dad Phil told us about a very unexpected call that he got maybe a year after Angie vanished.
One day in Temecula, I'm not sure how long afterwards it was, but maybe it was a year or so, that an officer from the Temecula PD came to the house and said that he had a message from I can't remember her name, but it was a sergeant in charge of robbery in, I think it was Kansas City, Missouri. And she told me that she was actively investigating Angie's disappearance. It was her case. But she was asking me if I had any information regarding it. And she told me she had no information, and that was as far as that went. The only timeline that I really have I'm aware of is when she left me in Chowchilla. Up to that point, I thought things were great. I thought she was doing good, and then she was just gone. And I have no idea. I mean, I don't know. I'm just so confused because she just vanished. I mean, she's just dropped off the face of the earth.
All of these little pieces and questions lead us to wonder what could have happened to Angie and Mikey. There are so many rumors and so much gossip that it's difficult to untangle the web of small-town lore from what may have actually happened when the most crucial details are unknown. Angie's dad told us about some of the things that he's heard over the years.
Weaver told me the story about this man and a woman, supposedly who was Angie agreed that to let them adopt Mikey while she's supposedly in the timeline with me out in California. And supposedly this couple, he was a mean SOB and nobody liked him. Everybody feared him, supposedly. And supposedly Angela called up from California to ask for a bus fare. They sent it. This is all coming from Detective Weaver. Then she called back supposedly a week or so, a few days, whatever it was, that she lost the money. Again, they sent her the bus fare, as I was told, and she went back to wherever she went to, and they picked her up, and they were going to drive back to wherever they were going to. But they stopped off at a motel. And he says that the next morning, the gal, the wife, claimed that Angela and Mikey got into a pickup truck and drove off. And Weaver disputed in his own mind, thinking that the husband wouldn't let Mikey go that easily because he's really fond of the boy. And then I said, well, what happened to this fella? He goes, well, somebody shot and killed him. And he was telling me he questioned the woman's story. And that's the latest I got from Dale Weaver.
This is another place where we run into some conflicting information. When Angie went to California in 2001 and stayed with her dad, Mikey was being cared for by Angie's friend, Brandy. And Phil vividly remembers that this was, in fact, 2001, because she was there with him on 9/11. And we also know that she was alive after this point. Could Angie have left Mikey with this couple at a later date, closer to when they actually disappeared, and made another trip to California? Then, this whole scenario that the detective told Phil possibly occurred sometime in or after September 2002. Angela's friend from Salem, Brandy, has also heard rumors about Angela being murdered because someone wanted to keep Mikey as their own. She took it upon herself to contact law enforcement years ago and try to get answers.
So I called the chief at the time, Albert Roark, and was telling him the story that I had heard. They wouldn't do nothing about it. The sheriff told me that they think they might have found Mikey, but because of the living situation that he would be in down here, which would be drugs, and his dad was in and out of prison and all that, that basically, not in these words, but, you know, more or less, he told me that I just need to butt out or I could end up like her. That's what I took it. So I'm not the one to butt out. So me and her brother, after her brother had told me everything, I had started asking around the same story from everybody. You know, everybody had heard this.
As I mentioned earlier, Mikey's father passed away in 2019, so we don't have him to help us fill in the blanks, but he had been in contact with Brandy over the years. Mikey's father, Thomas or Tommy, had many run-ins with the law and found himself in and out of jail. But despite his struggles, he still seemed to want to find his son. Brandy told us about the last time she heard from Tommy.
He was in and out of jail. After he had got out, he had contacted me and he was trying to find him. And he had called me, I think it was in December, and told me, I think I found our boy. I'm on my way now. That's all I had heard from him until I've seen on Facebook where he had died in an Idaho jail. So that left us, it's hard to do anything if you're not legally family. Mikey will always be my baby. He's my family because I did have, you know, guardianship of him. And Angie will always be my family, regardless of whether we're blood or not. And Tommy said he had heard the same story.
Tommy died in an Idaho jail in 2019. Tommy had been arrested on an outstanding warrant and ingested a large amount of drugs right before the arrest, likely so that he wouldn't get more charges for the drugs he had in his possession. He later became unresponsive and passed away. We don't know what he may have known, but the passing of Mikey's father felt like another door had closed that would make finding Angela and Mikey even harder. There have been rumors pointing at the men who had been in Angela's life in the years before she disappeared. Some thought that Mikey's dad, Tommy, could have done something, but it seems doubtful based on how he continued to look for his son and seek answers. Other rumors pointed at the father of Angela's second son, Jeremy. Jeremy has an extensive criminal history for drug offenses, burglary, theft, and assault. Several people told us that Jeremy has a violent temper. In 2019, he was arrested after a violent assault against several family members. He struck his mother and was arguing with family while holding a knife that he stabbed through a wall. It has been rumored that Angie may have wanted to take her sons and move out of the area, and this could have been a possible motive. Jeremy didn't want to give up Matthew, but there's no evidence to substantiate that claim. Some question the man that Angela had married shortly before she disappeared. Unfortunately, we don't know a whole lot about their relationship or how it ended, but questions remain about his story of the last time he spoke to Angela and other things that he has said or done. While fingers have pointed at these men since Angie and Mikey disappeared, we have no solid proof that they harmed Angela or Mikey, or that they had any motive to make the two disappear forever. The rumor that Angela was killed and Mikey kidnapped seems to be one of the most prevalent rumors about their disappearances. That's certainly a possibility, but there are other rumors that have seemed to surface over and over again as well. One rumor circles around Angela having been killed in relation to drug use, or by people she knew that used drugs. Phil told us that he is not naive about Angela experimenting with drugs, but doesn't believe she was heavily involved in that world.
I always got secondhand information. I had no firsthand knowledge of Angela doing any drugs, but I just heard that she did from Greg. But not a lot of drugs that he smoked pot with her. He wouldn't let her do this. He wouldn't let her do that. Whether that's true or not, I have no idea. She was the kind of child and kind of probably young adult who would up for anything as far as trying different things. If she settled on anything, who knows? But I would imagine that she would be quite experimental. Every time I did see her, I would say it would be more recreational because being in the fire service, I saw the effect of a lot of drugs on people. I never saw any physical evidence of it on her when the times I did see her. Because she came to visit me before I even moved to Chowchilla. She came out with Tommy Ratu and spent a week or so with me. And I spent a lot of time with her, and I didn't see any inner complexion or anything. I never saw any telltale signs.
When we discuss the possibility of drugs or people associated with drugs being involved in Angela's disappearance with Tiffany, this is what she shared with us.
There is rumors in Salem that Angela was murdered and buried in Salem, and that the people involved in her life ended hers. I believe it was the people involved in her life at that time, and I believe there's witnesses. In my opinion, that needs to be looked at very closely. I believe there has been some interviews. I do not believe there's been any searches. People in her life need to be looked at, the people she was hanging out with. And I believe that people in Salem know what happened to Angela. And I believe there's some people that know where we can find her. I don't know why they won't come forward and talk, though. And that leaves me more questions. I think that for some reason, somebody was upset with Angela and they murdered her and they buried her in Salem, Arkansas. And I believe I actually know where her body could potentially be buried in a cemetery there. And I've given that information to Fulton County. To my acknowledgement, there has been no searches to date. I've been told that if they were to search, they would easily be able to locate her remains.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. The tip that Angela's remains could easily be located is intriguing. It makes you wonder why she wouldn't have been found after nearly 20 years. Maybe there is some truth to that tip, and her remains have been found, not well concealed, and unidentified in another state. Tiffany told us about a Jane Doe in Illinois that has striking similarities to Angela.
During this search for Angela, I joined a bunch of different groups on Facebook. I joined the Doe group. I joined all those groups. And I was spending time in my evenings going through and looking at Jane Doe's. You know, I figured I had to rule everything out. This Jane Doe is the sixth Jane Doe to be found in that area. They weren't 100% sure if this one was linked to a serial killer out of Illinois because she was the only one on the outskirts of the area. Honestly, from Missouri, it's a straight line. Angela's information, Namath had the wrong photo. The photo that they had with Angela's information was not her. So you have her wrong photo. You have her wrong description. They had her listed as 4'3". She's 5'3". How are you ever going to cross-reference her with a Jane Doe if you have her height a foot wrong? Then Angela has distinguishing characteristics, like her previously fractured, healed right foot injury. I wrote Namath a letter after this because I was extremely upset because October 7th, I located a Jane Doe out of Brooklyn, Illinois, St. Clair County. She matches Angela's description, including the previously fractured right foot injury. The Jane Doe was Caucasian. I have turned that information over to Fulton County, and I'd personally like for DNA to be cross-referenced on it. I realize that you have to rule out everything. And when something pops up like this, you got to look at it. You can't just pass it by.
Jane Doe's DNA has completed the sampling process and been added to the National DNA database. However, law enforcement didn't obtain a sample from one of Angela's relatives until October 2020. At the time this episode was recorded, it was unknown if that sample had been sent into the lab for processing or where it was in the process. Some other interesting information about this Jane Doe is that her remains were recovered in 2006, and her estimated date of death is between 2003 and 2005. Her height was estimated to be between 5 foot and 5 foot 5 inches tall, but most likely 5'3", like Angie. And as Tiffany mentioned, she had a healed fracture of the right foot. With many different things lining up with this Jane Doe, it will be interesting to see how things turn out when the DNA testing is completed. And yet another bizarre twist in a case already full of twists and turns. The photo that Namath had on Angie's profile was not just some random mix-up. The photo was a relative of Tommy Ratu's wife. Remember, Tommy is Mikey's father, and this was the woman he was married to when Mikey and Angie disappeared. It remains unclear how they got this photo of her relative, but it's just another strange clue. Was this a mistake, or was someone trying to mislead the search for Angie by giving them the wrong picture? Angela's family has tried desperately over the years to connect with law enforcement to obtain answers to their questions, including how to submit DNA samples to the national database, and to try to determine what's been done in the search for Angie and Mikey, but they've received little in the way of answers. Angie's older brother, Joe, has teamed up with her friend, Tiffany, for years to keep up with the search, and when we spoke with him, he told us that he hasn't been able to learn much from local law enforcement.
You know, they've been pretty tight-lipped with me. They talk to me. Me and Tiffany stay in pretty close contact. So she's told me something, because the police have been more open with her than they have with me. Which, you know, really kind of, I wanted to know why. I mean, Tiffany's kind of investigative. She's really good. But, you know, I asked Weaver for his email one day. We were talking, and I was driving, and I said, I'll just give you mine and email me. Because I had some letters about the time Angela went missing to help with the timeline. He hasn't spoken to me since then. I'm part of the family. And then I found letters, they weren't from Angela, from my mom, talking about her going missing, and, you know, they were having problems with the timeline. And I said, well, I got these letters, and they're dated. You know, I can get them to you. I can email them to you. You just got to email me with your email, and I would have had no problem. But yeah, he hasn't talked to me since then. Then he's been out of the office when I've called. So I kind of gave up just talking to them, because I don't think they're doing much anyway. Mikey has been a big concern. I mean, it's kind of crazy that he went missing too. And if somebody could harm a child like that, that's just disturbing.
Joe also shared with us that he sometimes thinks that there's more to the story than a small-town sheriff's department who has overlooked the case all of these years.
I definitely think they got a hand, not a hand in what happened, possibly, but they know what's going on, you know, and I think they've covered up a lot of stuff because family ties run deep there. You know, the fact that they didn't really care that Angela went missing. And I think it's because she wasn't a local. They didn't like non-local people. And the fact that, you know, my family had moved out there from California. And, you know, it's just like, I think it's the small town justice system. You know, they could have made an effort to do more. They could have made sure all their information was correct. People are really tight-lipped in that town. We just can't verify anything. And it's kind of like good old boy justice. Everybody watches out for everybody. You know, they're all locals. That's a whole other story of that sheriff's department. I mean, they put up the wrong picture of Angela, misspelled her name. And, you know, they knew Angela. I mean, it's a small town. Anybody came into that town, if they didn't know you, they were going to figure it out. So Angela had been there since, you know, I think the beginning of high school is when they moved out there. They knew who Angela was. They knew what she looked like.
Having struck out with the local police, Angie's dad, Phil, told us more about a time that he tried to reach someone with the Arkansas State Police, hoping they could be of more assistance than the local law enforcement.
The thing that concerned me the most was Rourke was friends with Jeremy's father, and that Rourke supposedly has just fouled this investigation up or just intentionally not done this or that. And I got so concerned about it, I called the state police in Arkansas. I expressed explicit instructions, please do not contact the Salem Police Department or Chief Rourke, that I want to talk to somebody. And they, of course, it went to two or three different hands before I got to somebody. They said, no, we won't contact. Next thing I know, I get a call from some captain in the state police telling me, well, I talked to Chief Rourke, and he told me. So that's how that went. I was so surprised that I asked the state police not to contact them. First thing they did is contact them, and I thought, okay, this is what we're up against. Just a good old boy syndrome.
Throughout all the obstacles, Tiffany has continued to spearhead the efforts to make progress in the search for Angie and her son, but has also had many frustrating moments trying to connect with law enforcement, She told us about the first time she heard from the investigator assigned to the case.
In my opinion, I believe there was never an investigation before. I don't believe that it was ever active and ongoing until 2020. What I will tell you is when I was contacted in August of 2020, I was asked for her date of birth and if I knew her social security number. So I was contacted on August 18th by investigator Del Weaver with Fulton County. So he basically told me that he had been contacted by Adele Colmby with Missing and Exploited Children. He had received some information and it may have prompted him to reach out to me. So investigator Weaver, when he reached out to me the very first time, he was pretty intimidating. Basically was like, I'm not playing games here. What do you know? You're going to tell me. He did not like that I had previously cast a bad light on their department or what they had not done in this case. When I was requesting help from Arkansas State Police and other people, what I was saying.
Tiffany was encouraged by law enforcement's seemingly sudden interest in taking a look at Angela and Mikey's case, despite the passage of almost two decades. A few months after the investigator called her, she called the agency back with some questions of her own.
Why was this never an early active investigation? Why has there never been any searches? October 26, 2018, I personally contacted Fulton County. At that time, I talked to Sheriff Albert Ward. In my opinion, he did not want to talk with me. I had to call him four or five different times to even catch him that day. He told me that he believed that Angela was deceased. He would not discuss Mikey's case with me. He did say that he had recently received a new lead, but would not provide me with any details. At that time, October 26, 2018, I told him that Namath had the wrong photo. The photo that they had with Angela's information was not her. That photo did not get changed until the media got involved September 10th, 2020. I would really like, to be honest with you, somebody else to come in and look at this case. Somebody else to come in, look at it, oversee it, or take over it. I have begged, I have asked, I have pleaded. I don't know what, you know, at this point, who else? I got to the point where I went online to social media. And I was begging for them to look at this case, just to repost the case so that their followers would find out about the case. I've contacted the Arkansas State Police. I've received a response back from their spokesperson, Bill Stadler, basically telling me that if I have firsthand evidence, I can turn it over to the prosecutor. You know, this is an ongoing investigation, and I have not been apprised of any new information since the case is open.
Despite extensive research, we have been unable to determine exactly when or to whom Angela was reported missing. The details on Mikey's disappearance remain confusing and mixed up. There is an odd detail in the news article we mentioned earlier that said Angela and Mikey were last seen in a truck believed to be owned by Angela's husband, James, or one of his relatives. But we were never able to confirm this, and we're not sure why this unsubstantiated detail is still included on missing persons' websites. We hope that filing a records request would yield the vital information missing from this case and give us insight to some of the unexplained details. So we filed an open records request with the Fulton County Sheriff's Office in Arkansas in early December of 2020. We never received a response to our request, despite the 3 business day response time requirement outlined in the Arkansas Freedom of Information Act. We did, however, speak to the investigator assigned to Angie and Mikey's case. We first asked the investigator about our records request, hoping that even an initial missing persons report would clear up some of the uncertainty. This is what he told us.
Was it a Freedom of Information Act? No, we're not going to answer that. As long as this thing's under investigation, you know, that's just not going to happen. As soon as it isn't, we'll be happy to give you anything and everything. That's what the request asks for, everything. I put it with my file. Sheriff gave it to me the other morning. He really didn't know who you were, but he just said when he got it and told me that he had it, and he said, we're not going to answer this now, as long as this is under investigation. And I understood that. I've been a sheriff before myself, and so I would have done the same thing in his shoes. But like I said, we'll we'll answer anything we can. But I would rather he approve that. You can run through them. If it's something that I think that's going to compromise things, though, I will tell you so.
When we asked about conducting an interview for this episode, the investigator told us that he could not agree to answer our interview questions, but did share some information with us.
I had given an interview or two about this in the past, and there's really not much to add at this time. It's still being investigated. We have other agencies involved in helping us. We're trying to run down every lead possible. Absolutely nothing to hide. I've been pretty open about this whole thing with anybody and everybody. And I've been very forthcoming with the family about everything that's going on. They're hung up. I say they. Greg's hung up on one direction in this thing. And I keep trying to tell him that he needs to broaden his vision there a little. And I've tried to explain to him why. But one that we're working on primarily right now that I have the FBI helping me out on, that it's about 180 degrees from where they're at. But anyway, that's why we investigate, you know, because you can just get hung up and get tunnel vision hung up on one thing and never go anywhere. And we've tried to avoid that.
Finally, the investigator we spoke with reassured us that Angela and Mikey's case is currently being worked on.
I've been doing this stuff for almost 40 years, and I've worked a few cold cases in the past. You just have to follow absolutely every lead and keep throwing it out there and trying to make something happen. And we are so much further than where we were 3 months ago. So I feel pretty good about finding out what happened.
The search for Angela and Mikey has been full of rumors and speculation as to what may have happened to them, but they lack evidence pointing to anything concrete. Some have suggested that Angela left on her own free will, but Tiffany doesn't believe this to be true.
People have said, well, what makes you think she didn't just run away? What makes you think she didn't just go into, like, witness protection program? She's not in witness protection. She didn't leave her 2-year-old son behind. She would not have gone away and had her mom pass away and never reach out. She didn't just vanish. Something happened to her. Somebody made it happen. She's not in witness protection program. Everybody can take that off of their theory.
One of the theories that you heard about in this case is that Angela was murdered because someone else or a couple wanted to raise Mikey as their own. Is there a chance that Mikey could be out there somewhere alive and doesn't know his true identity? Brandy hopes that this is the case, and that someday she'll see Mikey again.
I do feel like we're going to find him, but how he's going to react and stuff scares me, because there's no telling what he was told. But I do want him to know that I've thought about him. I've never stopped thinking about him. I'd give anything to give her a hug and tell her I love her right now. Anything. Because she was my girl.
Angela's family has spent many years searching for answers. Her mother, Lorna, passed away without ever knowing what happened to her daughter and grandson. Angie's brother, Joe, told us about the toll that Angie and Mikey's disappearance took on her, as well as her father, Phil.
As far as I know, she spent a lot of time trying to investigate this before she passed away and talking to people, and she died not ever knowing. She had a good, you know, in with those people in Salem because she'd lived there for quite a while. My mom's house at that point in time was just a place for everybody to come hang out. You know, my mom would let anybody in, you know, come on in. So, you know, the kids would go hang out with Angela and Greg and maybe eat some food. So she knew everybody quite well. She was pretty upset about it. My mom worried a lot. My dad actually told me this last time. He told me, he goes, look, Joe, he goes, I want you to be the family spokesperson. He goes, because I can't handle any more disappointment. You know, I get it. And I said, yeah, I got it, Dad. You know, he's getting older, and, you know, and I understand the disappointment, but, you know, time for me to step up now. Everybody's had a little part in this, at least. And if I can ease my dad's mind, you know, that's great. He doesn't show his emotions a lot. But I know he's really upset about this. He's talked to me a little bit. You know, it drives him crazy.
Angie's dad, Phil, continues to search for his daughter and grandson, and he holds out hope that one day they will be found.
And I, for years, worked in the car business, and I ran her credit every 6 months, and there was never anything added after, I believe it was, I think, 2002 or 2001. And what I was looking for was inquiries, and there was nothing, not a single inquiry. And she was never the type, I don't believe anyways, to just drop off the grid like that. And you know, I don't think she had the wherewithal or the training or the knowledge or anything to just live off the grid without being detected. A young woman with a child, there's got to be something. Someone knows something from somewhere at some time. I mean, it just didn't make sense to me. Well, I think everybody's grown up now, and there might be a change of heart or something. Some information may come forward.
So what happened to Angela and Mikey sometime in 2002? Did they disappear together or separately? Why was there a couple in Missouri watching Mikey? And why does it seem as though they wanted to adopt him? Was there any truth to the story that Angela was considering letting them keep him? If she did allow that to happen, why hasn't she ever resurfaced? And what about Angela's husband, James? He didn't file for divorce for 16 years after he says he last spoke to her in June of 2002. How did he reach her when she didn't have a cell phone? And how did he know to call her in California, where he says she was staying at the time? One mystery of this case is the day that Mikey was reported missing. What transpired that day that caused his father to go to the police? And why did it take so long for a real investigation to begin? Missing persons cases often seem to fall through the cracks or have a delayed investigation, but we're left wondering why it appears that no one looked for Angie and Mikey at the time they disappeared. We know that Angela was in Arkansas on May 30th, 2002, when she fractured her foot in a terrible car accident she and her husband were in. After that, we don't know what happened to her, but we know that by late September, when her brother Greg called their mother, she told him that Angie was missing. When was Angela actually reported missing to law enforcement? We don't even know when Mikey was last physically seen, only that his father reported him missing on September 1st, 2002, and said that he had been seen that day. We don't know where he was seen or with whom. Throughout our research into this story, we heard a rumor that there is a photo of Mikey taken after September 2002. That has a date stamp on it. Other than these small traces left behind, we can only speculate about the rumors that have swirled over the last 19 years in rural northern Arkansas. At the time Angela Mack disappeared, she was 20 years old. She's approximately 5'3" tall and weighed around 100 pounds. She has blonde hair and blue eyes. Thomas Mikey Ratu was 4 years old at the time he disappeared. He was approximately 3 feet tall and weighed around 45 pounds. He has brown hair and brown eyes. If you have any information about the disappearance of Angela Mack or Thomas Mikey Ratu, you're asked to call the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children at 1-800-THE-LOST or 1-800-843-5678.
I mean, that's an innocent child and an innocent girl that, you know, they have family that love them and want to reconnect with them. I'm scared that we're not going to get to see Angie again.
This whole case has so many twists and turns. It's just ridiculous. But then I started hearing all this crap about Arkansas and rumors of her in a dope deal. She was buried in a grave on top of somebody else, and because she pissed somebody off. It was just five or six rumors going around that just didn't sound right.
When this came back up, I was extremely worried about her family because this has been 18 years. They've gone through a lot. This has caused a domino effect on many people's lives. People don't realize that. But when something like this happens, lives are affected down the road for years and years and years. Family dynamics change. Everything changes. So they've been through a lot and they've hurt a lot. Not knowing has been the hardest thing, in my opinion. And then the rumors. The rumors are extremely hard to think that they're, you know, there's a rumor going around that your daughters and or some of your friends been murdered and that people know where she is, but nothing's been done. You know, that's hard. And then not knowing about Mikey. That's extremely hard. Knowing that there's a four-year-old, is he alive? Did he get to have the life that this four-year-old should have had?
A lot of it has been rumors, but things just don't add up. You know, it wasn't like my sister to do, you know, just to go missing. I think it's the small-town justice system. There's been no answers, and, you know, the rumors don't help. My family just wants closure. And, you know, we hope for the best. We hope she's still alive. But personally, I had to come to terms with that. I don't think she is, because it's just not like her. So I just hope we get some results this time. You know, my family's been really kind of disappointed, you know, because we hear things, and you get your hopes up, and then it pans out to be nothing. And, you know, somebody knows what happened. Somebody out there knows.
That brings us to the end of episode 272. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Be sure to tune in next week. I'll be covering a case from Florida. Thanks for listening. Hey Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law & Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.